Hello, welcome to Lion of Judah Synagogue. Today we're going to talk about Cyrus the Great. Last week and the week before and the week before that, actually last week I don't think I had a show, and sometime in between I didn't have a show either, but we were talking about Emmanuel, how he was written about, what he came for, what's transpired since, and now I'm finally ready for the show on Cyrus. Here we go. They are all right. So we are going to talk about Cyrus the Great today in Lion of Judah Synagogue. And for some reason, I really closed down all my windows. Okay. Well, luckily, I remember them all, but I got to put this microphone somewhere where it's comfortable. Well, I guess I can just go like this. The first one we're going to look at is in Jeremiah 51. And we're going to go to the New Living Translation. I just found this one. No, I guess it's not the New Living Translation. Let's see if I put Cyrus. Again, this is Jeremiah 51. All right, so on the Living Bible, I guess is what it's at. That's why I noticed this, because I usually just know about one place in Isaiah that Cyrus is mentioned. Like we talked about before, Emmanuel was also mentioned in the book of Isaiah. So he was mentioned 1,000 years before he was born. But Cyrus is a little less known figure throughout the world today. He was born like 600 years before Emmanuel, but 400 years after Isaiah wrote about him prophesying that he would show up. So I guess the main thing is that he did show up. And when he showed up, he knew who he was. And he kind of told everybody, like, yo, I'm Cyrus, this is my God, the God of Israel, and I'm written about right here. And he worshiped the God of Israel, although, if you get into the readings by Xenophon, the education of Cyrus, I knew there had to be a book about Cyrus somehow, somewhere, written by somebody, because Cyrus took over the whole world at that time. That's why he's called Cyrus the Great. He actually took over the whole world. I just finished actually reading The Education of Cyrus today, which made me feel like I was ready for the show. And then figuring out this Jeremiah 51:20 in the Living Bible, which is different in any other Bible. But if you go to the Living Bible, because it's talking about the Messiah here, they, in the Living Bible, they substituted Cyrus in there for whatever reason, okay? But it's saying that Cyrus is God's battle axe and sword. I will use you, says the Lord, to break nations in pieces and to destroy many kingdoms. That's probably why, because they seen that God was going to use them. But it was actually talking about the Messiah here, because if we go to Jeremiah 51:19, I guess we'll do that at a different time. Anyways, the point is that to break nations into pieces and destroy many kingdoms, that's exactly what Cyrus did. He had to. But if you read The Education of Cyrus, he was very, people love Cyrus. They all wanted to be like him. Because he treated people that he saw were doing good with, like, royal rewards and destroyed the people he saw doing bad. And that just brought everybody towards him. So everybody kind of wanted to be like him at that time. And he was leading people into great battles to conquer more land. But the reason that Xenophon wrote about him was because he was able to subdue like the whole land at one time. And Xenophon was kind of like, how does this person do it? Because we observe animals and they don't rebel to a leader. But for some reason, humans do, but they don't rebel to Cyrus. And how come? But again, if you read his books, there's another book about the battles that happened kind of after Cyrus passed away. It's kind of weird how Cyrus passed away. You almost wonder if he just went into hiding so he didn't have to be the king anymore and just was like, okay, I'd rather just go away now because I've already done everything and I'd rather be like a nobody again. Because according to the book, Education of Cyrus, sorry if I'm going to spoil the endings for you, but I guess you can research it online. Or whatever, he got a dream that said, yo, your time is waning short. And he knew he was going to die, so he just called everybody in, said, yo, I'm going to die, and then curled up and died. That's how it goes. That's really how the end of Cyrus's life goes. Hopefully we see him again. But in that short amount of time, he conquered all of the Middle East, pretty much. And then there's something called the Cyrus Cylinder that he buried in Babylon. Once he conquered that, became the king of Babylon. Because once he did, he told the Jews they could go back and rebuild the temple. And this is exactly what Isaiah prophesied about 400 years. That's why he knew that he had to tell them to do it, because it would fulfill the prophecy written about him. So in the 44th chapter of Isaiah, verse 28, it says, thus saith of Cyrus, he is my shepherd. So this is Isaiah, well, God talking through Isaiah. And he's saying, this is what I'm saying about Cyrus, that he is my shepherd, okay, and will perform all my pleasure, and say to Jerusalem, you shall be built, and to the temple your foundation shall be laid. And that's exactly what Cyrus said when he conquered Babylon, and the Jews were captive in Babylon for like, I think for 70 years, I think. And I think Daniel actually prophesied, or Jeremiah prophesied, they'd go to Babylon for 70 years, and they did, and then Cyrus freed them. So it was all about God, and God revealing himself through Cyrus was probably the reason that the Jews even went over there, besides their unbelief in the God of Israel, you know. So it's like, all right, go serve in Babylon or go do something else. And then when you figure it out, you'll be back. And it's kind of like a drug dealer. I'm definitely not putting the God of Israel down there to that level, but I'm saying like there's something that the spirit needs that can only be provided for the one true God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Alright, so the point was on that whole thing was that people are going to come back, and they're going to, even though they have doubts, they're going to come back, and then they might have doubts, but they're going to come back, and they might have doubts, but they're going to come back. Alright, so, and Cyrus was the shepherd. Like, he took care of a lot of people. Like, he drove out a lot of bad people. He kept his people safe and drove out the wolves. The sheep were safe with Cyrus, and he drove out all the wolves. So the Cyrus Cylinder was made of clay. And the cool thing about the Cyrus Cylinder, though, is it's, I think it's called cuneiform. I don't know if that's really the word or not. But it's kind of strange how it works, because they, like, take a piece of clay, let's just say a tablet of clay, and then they use a straight stick. Well, the end of the stick is a point, right? But the point's got a, just a straight line, kind of like a flathead screwdriver. Let's just say they're using a flathead screwdriver for all intents and purposes. So the point is that they press the flathead screwdriver in, and they pull it out of the clay, and then they turn it, and then they press it in again. They pull it out of the clay, and then they turn it, and then they press it into the clay again. Well, eventually, after you make three or four of those marks, maybe even two, it comes out with a letter, maybe even one. It comes out with a letter, and or some kind of hieroglyph, I guess we'll call it, or character in computer language. And yeah, it comes out with a character, and that's how they read back in the day using clay, was with that type of writing. So on the Cyrus cylinder, it had that writing, and he buried it there just as a record that, yeah, because, you know, records get destroyed. People burn them. I think all the Babylonian libraries are burned, probably, and every library is burned. But the point is that Cyrus made sure that that was preserved, and they dug it up, like, years, years later. I can't remember how many years. So Cyrus is written about along with Emmanuel in the book of Isaiah. So let's take a look here. And then right after 44, verse 28, Isaiah follows it up with chapter 45. And I think this is only the three times that I think Cyrus is mentioned in the Bible. I don't know, though. I'm going to do a little bit more research on that, but I probably won't come back to this topic. But yeah, if you could find him more, maybe. That's three times I found Cyrus in the Bible, and that's pointed. But one of them was in the Living Bible. I want to say Cyrus is almost definitely mentioned a few more times in the Bible, but, like, it took me a while to figure. And my Emmanuel's only mentioned twice in the book of Isaiah, I think. But yet, look at all he did with the whole Christianity movement. All right, thus saith the Lord to his anointed. So he's saying Cyrus is his anointed, to Cyrus, whose right hand he's held to subdue nations before him. And I will loose the loins of kings to open before him the two leave gates, and the gates shall not be shut. Ooh, so he's basically talking about the east gate now. Wow, that's kind of deep, honestly. So he's saying to Cyrus, his anointed. So, yeah, that's pretty deep. This because he's saying Cyrus is almost a messianic figure. And he's saying that his right hand did he hold. Like, Cyrus is, basically, he walked with Cyrus to subdue nations before him. So, God was there to help him subdue the nations. Just like God said in all the battles that Israel faced. He's like, dude, I'm with you. Like, as long as you're not messing around, I'm messing up, I'm gonna be with you. But, like, you mail Achan, and now they have Achan's Valley, where God told them don't take anything from Jericho, and that guy got away with the gold and buried it, and then God wasn't with them because they turned on him. So the same thing. But he said he's held Cyrus's right hand, and he wants him to subdue nations before him, and he'll loose the loins of kings, because Cyrus put down a lot of kings. But this is also kind of talking about the Messiah. That's what I'm saying. For some reason in Jeremiah, the Living translators decided that they were going to put Cyrus in there instead of the Messiah. Or it doesn't even say anything in the King James Version. It just says, I'm going to use you as the weapon of warfare, or whatever. But, yeah, so they for some reason put that in there. All right, so, but here in 45, and it's going to get deeper next week. Next week we're going to talk about someone else that's revealed inside Isaiah. And it's kind of trippy because once you see it, you'll probably never unsee it. It's like one of those 3D puzzles or whatever that you, like, stare at for a long time to see. They're not puzzles, but they are 3D images that you stare at for a long time, and then all of a sudden you see it. And once you see it, like, your mind's been open, and it's like, mind blown, you know. But, yeah, next week we're going to talk about that. We're coming up to the end of this show. So this show has just been about Cyrus and how the book of Isaiah, like I said, the three previous shows were about Emmanuel, how he's born of a virgin that fulfilled the prophecy. Well, this one is Cyrus, who fulfilled the prophecy after he's written about that he'd subdue nations and that he'd be God's anointed. And even when Cyrus was down here, according to the Education of Cyrus, you know, he's doing sacrifices and stuff. So he was always sacrificing. But because Greeks wrote it, they always turned it back to Greek gods and tried to make it a polytheistic thing. But obviously Cyrus knew that he was written about in the book of Isaiah, and he was doing exactly what God told him to do. He had to go know that going forth. Like, hey, I'm a kid, I'm written about, and I'm going to go forth and subdue nations. So he just worked it out his whole life. All right. that has been the Lion of Judah Synagogue. Oh, I got my black cat in here. All right, you take care. God bless everybody out there.
Your presence is all I seek.